and an article entitled How to Win a Saint's Grace. Saints, among whom Sri Ramana Maharshi was a unique one, are the saviors of mankind. They are the awakeners of the human spirit. Having realized God, they always live and act in Him. Hence, they are able to kindle the divine spark in everyone who comes into contact with them. They are thus the great liberators by whose help man can come across the sea of samsara, of ignorance. With rare exception, as in the case of Sri Ramana, it is only with the touch of a God-realized soul that a person begins to tread the spiritual path and find inner peace. All the scriptures alike stress the value of satsang, or association with Mahatmas, great souls. They make us aware of our true nature. It is by the kripa, the grace of a saint, that a fallen soul is regenerated and set on the path. The stories of Narada, Valmiki, Saint Paul, Jagai, and Madai tell us how, by saints' contact, those who were leading a low life and a sinful life were wonderfully transformed and raised to the summit of spiritual realization. But we see that not all who meet a saint are at once changed or elevated. That is because the kripa, or the grace of a saint, begins to work on a person only when the latter is psychologically ready, as willed by the divine, to receive the benefit by it. The saint's touch no doubt awakens the sleeping spirit, but the aspirant has to walk a long distance by himself before he reaches the goal of life. To get established in the consciousness of the divine, he must regularly practice self-discipline, following a system of sadhana to tune the mind with the infinite, the great truth dwelling within him, by meditation, by ceaseless remembrance of God, and surrender to His will. This he will be able to do only if he has a real thirst for spiritual liberation and the necessary spirit of vairagya, or distaste for worldly pleasures. Then alone he can concentrate his mind on the supreme quest of life and devote all his energies to God. Merely running after saints without a burning aspiration to attain the highest will not produce the expected result. A caution has to be uttered also to those who stay long in the company of saints, serving them. The association is indeed valuable, but it must be of the right kind. The contact must be internal. Otherwise, there is the danger of the aspirant's mind getting externalized and remaining attached to the person of the saint, missing the impersonal truth which the saint's life embodies and which constitutes his glory. Without reaching depths of the inner reality represented by the saint, the aspirant cannot reap the full benefits of satsang. One must take care not to fall into error of thinking that a saint's grace or kripa can be won merely by adoring and serving his person without looking upon all beings as his expressions, and adoring them with an equal vision. There is nothing more harmful to a spiritual aspirant than a narrow, personal, or partisan attitude. His progress depends on the extent to which he is able to universalize his outlook and expand his heart. The Guru, or God, is the all-pervading Atman. He dwells in all. He is the inner guide and enlightener. His injunction to his disciples is, seek and find me first in yourself, and then as everybody and everything. I reside in the hearts of all. To love and to serve them is to love and serve me. A saint's grace can come only by developing this universal outlook. Would like to speak this evening on saints alive. In the West, we have to a large degree lost any regard or thought even about a saint or what a saint might be. In traditional Catholic Church, saints have been regarded down through the centuries, and through a democratic type process, they are voted in if there are certain criteria that are met. But the real or inner meaning of a saint surpasses what any committee can bestow upon an individual. It is through direct God communion that an individual is transformed from a normal human being into saint consciousness. Saint consciousness resides in God consciousness. It is through keeping the mind ever present on God that this body, these emotions, this mind are all transformed into something that is quite unique and splendid. We are all on an evolutionary trip. Now, evolution came into popular thought with Darwin, who talked about the evolution of the species. And through a quirk of nature or some mutation, we were taken on a journey that took us from very simple life forms into more complex life forms. Now, there are many problems with this theory as it stands, and many of these have come out over time. But there is another kind of evolution that is definitely occurring within us at all times, and that is the evolution of this consciousness, yours, mine, everyone's. We are born with consciousness. Consciousness means an awareness. You have a field of awareness that is within you and around you. We all take in sensory information through sight, feeling, hearing, tasting, and smelling. Through that, we perceive this world. Through those perceptions, we gain judgments about this world. Some things are painful to the touch, other things are pleasurable to the touch. Some people are pleasant to be around, other people are difficult to be around. And as we enter into this world of complexity, we're pulled further and further into this sensory world and the judgments that we gain by it. We also gain an identity that says, this is me. I am this body. I am this individual. And I take in these sense perceptions and I make these judgments. I have a certain history behind me. And with that history, I gain certain habits. And this I identify as myself. Rare is it the person who decides to go beyond and explore what might be transcending the mere human personality and go into the transpersonal or the spiritual personality. This spiritual personality we all have latent within us, but very few people actually go in and explore it and find it for themselves. Within all spiritual traditions, they tell a truth, and the truth is this, that we are human beings that are ready for the transformation into divine beings. Now, what does this mean to become a divine being? It means that the intelligence, the feeling, the perceptions that we get through this body, through this brain, and beyond other ways of knowing that go even beyond what this individualized brain can know, can be transformed and spiritualized. Spiritualized means you get the presence of that spiritual being, that spiritual essence of which we are all made up of. This is absolutely essential to understand in understanding any religion, that its complete and total focus should be this transmutation from the human to the divine. In the first of John in the Christian scriptures, it says that to all them that received him gave he the power to become the sons of God. This is the same thing. It is becoming the Son of God. That is to become an illumined being, a spiritual being, with your intelligence, with your whole being lit up with this light. Now, this is an inner light that cannot necessarily be seen with these two eyes. It is seen with the inner eye, and it is the inner eye of intelligence that resides within us all. We all have these dynamos of spiritual intelligences and energy that reside in the body. They primarily exist along the spine. And just as even you see a power station where a lot of heavy-duty electrical lines run into this power station, and from there it is spread out and goes out to all the city that allows our lights to run and allows all of the electricity to be able to be seen throughout the city. So within your own being, you make up a world. And within this world, this life energy comes into your body. Now, through the science of yoga, we learn that this is through the medulla. In Christian scriptures, this is called the mouth of God. And it is through the medulla oblongata that the cosmic dynamic energy is brought into the body. There are certain saints and certain realized beings who can exist totally without breathing. They've proven this time and again. There are saints down through the centuries who have existed without eating. Now, for a normal human being, we could not exist without breathing or without eating. And yet these individuals discovered some means by which this was possible. How is that so? They discovered this mouth of God. When Jesus' disciples went off and begged for some food at a certain town, they came back, and Jesus said to them when they offered him the food, that I have a bread that you know not of. And this is the mouth of God. This is the dynamic spiritual energy that comes in through the medulla into the brain and then is distributed down through the spinal system to all these dynamos that exist along the spinal system. Now, in Christian scriptures, these are called the candles, or they are called the churches. In Revelations, there are the seven candles and the seven churches. In the Eastern and yoga philosophy, it is called the chakras, and it is the seven chakras within the spine. You see, they all speak to the same truth, but they do it through symbolic language. All these truths have been encoded within these teachings. And they are all about you, they are all about me, they are about each one of us. And the truths that can be awakened within us, that we can know this truth. It's not just something to read about. It's not just something to speculate about. It goes beyond philosophy or the study of wisdom. And it gets into direct perception of wisdom. Now, this can only be done by taking this inner science, this spiritual science, and making it an art within our own life. By focusing our attention on these inner centers of light, these dynamic energies, we can awaken them and go into these highest states of consciousness. And this is a great, great truth that has been handed down through the millennium. However, for many and for most of us here in the West, we have been given the fairy tales. We have been given the outer coating of the nut without getting to the meat of it, the kernel that's inside. That's this great truth. There's a wonderful story told about parable and truth. And one day, truth was wandering the earth, and wherever it came to, whenever it came to a city and met some people, it would introduce itself and make itself known as truth. Well, as we all know, truth is not oftentimes very welcomed, and it was oftentimes beat up and thrown out of town. Well, it began to feel very sorry for itself because it was wandering all over the earth, not finding any hospitality at all. Nobody wanted to hear truth. Everybody wanted to be clothed in their fairy tales and be told lies instead of knowing the truth. One day, truth met this wonderful being. It was clothed in many, many colors and many layers, and they swirled around and around in the most beautiful, spectacular, interesting ways. And so truth approached this being, and it said, "Who are you? You're wonderful. Look at all these clothes. Look at all these layers. Look at all these colors that you are imbued with. Tell me who you are." And the being said, "I am parable. I tell stories, and as people go down through my depths, they get different meanings, they get different revelations. But you know, lately I've been feeling very empty. I feel as I'm missing something at my center, at my core. I can't quite name it, I can't quite identify it, but I know that it's missing there somehow." And truth said, "Well, I am truth, and everywhere I go, people abuse me so thoroughly, and I'm just getting so discouraged, wandering the earth, looking for some hospitality." Parable said, "Well, people love me wherever I go, but I have an inkling that you're my complement, that I've been wandering around with all these layers, but no core." And so they decided to join one another, truth with parable. And as they went around the world, they delighted people everywhere. As they took in these stories, these parables, and they took them in to the degree and to the level that they could entertain them. For some people, they were just delighted to hear the outer meanings of the stories. But for other people, it was to go deeper. It was to go inside. And layer after layer, like an onion peel being peeled back, another layer of truth would reveal itself to it. And for only those people who became very, very still, very quiet, could they penetrate all the way to the center. For the clever could only go so far. Only the wise could penetrate all the way into the truth. And so these wonderful parables, these scriptures, these mythologies that have been handed down generation after generation, each represent at the core a wonderful kernel of truth. And if we follow them and take them all the way to the greatest depth of their meaning, we can come into a knowledge of who and what we truly are. Now, saints down through the ages have revealed to us and told us that we are this living light. We are this intelligence. We are this love. We are this dynamic life force. And it exists within each and every one of us. Only for most of us, it lies dormant. Many people hear the parable, and they just take it as a moral truth, which is good in itself. Then others take it a little deeper, and they see a great philosophical truth there. But there are those few, those intrepid journeyers, who take it all the way to the very essence of its truth. Now, it's not because it's not available to everybody, this great truth, but it's because people are not interested. When you analyze an individual's day, they sleep until a certain time in the morning. Perhaps their alarm gets up or they just wake up naturally. And they start about their day. They have their breakfast. They start thinking about their day. Perhaps they have their family around them and they have to take care of things with their family. They think about their workday. And they go through their entire workday. Finally, they come home. They have some supper. Perhaps they relax to watch some TV, and then they get tired and they go to sleep at night. Now, for many people, that's an average day. And to find the interest, to find the energy, to find the time within that day, to take a deeper search into life, to look after life, you don't find many takers. Most people are satisfied with that. And in a way, that's like the outer coating of a parable. Because this life itself is your parable. It's the story you tell yourself. It's the meaning that you imbue life with moment to moment. And if you think that that's what life is, and that's the allness of it, then you are satisfied with that and you don't go any further. You stay on the outer layer of the parable. But for those few who get more interested into the spiritual or into the deeper philosophies of Earth, they go deeper. They think deeper about life. They are drawn more deeply into things philosophical or things spiritual. But they remain on the mental level. They think about philosophies. They think about the spiritual life. Perhaps they try to accord their life with their philosophy, but it only goes to the thought or the mental level. And then there is a third level, and these are the ones who are searching to go all the way into the center of truth. And they become very still, very quiet. They turn off their thoughts. They turn off the sensory flow of information that's constantly coming to us through our sight, through our hearing, through our smell, and so on. Then there's an echo that goes on with those sensory vibrations from the subconscious. And as we try to quiet ourselves, these echoes keep coming back to us through the subconscious. All that stream of thought that keeps us constantly busy on a mental level. But in the Psalms, in the Old Testament, it tells us, be still and know that I am God. Be still. Become still. Stilling this body, stilling these thoughts, stilling these feelings, natures. And through that inner stillness, a great truth, a great life begins to reveal itself to you. Now, it is said that prayer without meditation is like asking a question without waiting for the answer. You know? So we're talking to God, but do we listen to God? Do we open ourselves to what's coming to us? From that great universal intelligence and light of which we are all a part. Most people don't have faith in it. They don't have an idea that you are able to listen to God. Now, it sometimes comes as words. It sometimes comes even as an outer voice, but not usually. Usually it comes through that inner stillness, and in that inner stillness, in that quietness, a certain knowing comes to us, a certain revelation comes to us. The reason oftentimes great saints moved off into remote areas and prayed and meditated in caves and in forests, in places far away from civilization, was to get that quietness, to get that stillness, to get away from the rush of life long enough to get into that inner stillness. And with that inner stillness, these revelations started to come. Saint Anthony was a great saint in the early second century. And he went to church service one time. He was an Egyptian and lived in Egypt in the Nile Valley. And he was just living an ordinary life. But during the service, it said, quoting Jesus, that you should take everything that you have, sell it, give it to the poor, renouncing everything, and come and follow me. Well, he was a very unusual soul, Anthony was. He took it literally. He was actually a person of fairly well-off means. His parents had both died, and he had inherited all that they had, the lands, the wealth, and he had quite a lot of it. That day, he went out, and he made arrangements to sell all of his lands, to sell all of his property. He made arrangements for his sister that she would be all right, and then he gave everything else away to the poor. He walked away from the city, and he went off to the caves, and he started meditating on God. Now, this is not the usual person, and most of us aren't willing to do this kind of renunciation. Fortunately for us, because of this science that has been brought from India, from the East, we don't have to go through that kind of outer renunciation, or very, very few of us would be takers of it. But through this science of yoga, yoga means union with God. And it means to renounce this outer world. Now, what is it to renounce this outer world? It means to turn away from it. Repent also means to turn away from. So we turn away from the things of the world in order to meditate. We close our eyes. We close our ears off. We try to get into a space that's quiet. We begin to quiet this mind. How do we do that? By concentration. First, we focus upon this breathing. Now, it is said in the Old Testament that it is with breath that God instilled life into Adam. Now, in the Michelangelo painting, the famous one, he's giving a spark of life through the finger, through God's finger, into Adam's finger. But it actually says, breathe. And when we come into this lifetime as an infant, a newborn infant, what's the first thing that happens? We're given a little slap on the back, and we begin to breathe. Sometimes we start out with a cry, probably because we've been slapped. We don't like that very much. We've been in this nice, comfortable, warm womb, and suddenly we're being manhandled and a little mistreated. So we don't like that so much. So that's our introduction to the world. And it's from there that we continue, but it's with that breath. And for the average human being, we cannot exist without this breath. Now, those who go into the science of the spiritual science learn that they can go into times of suspended breathing. And when St. Paul said, I rejoice in Christ, I die daily, this dying daily means going into this death state. Or in other words, it's not an actual physical death, but it is a suspended breath. Or the breath becomes very, very slow. And when the breath becomes slow like this, our concentration becomes very intent. And when we focus here at the ajna, this is said to be the doorway to God. This is the third eye point, the point here at the center of the forehead, just above your eyebrows. And this is the doorway to God. When Jesus said, behold, I stand at the door and knock, you hear this knocking that comes through this om sound. And there are occasions when you hear it literally as a knocking kind of sound, but then you hear it as this high-pitched om sound, or the amen, or the word that comes in. And whoever opens the door, I come in and sup with him and he with me. And it is in there that we take bread with Christ or with God. Or in other words, we share the spiritual essence. Because remember, these are spiritual sayings. They're not meant to be understood on an outward physical realm. But we're meant to go into the parable. and go further into this life, into this consciousness, to where we discover who and what we truly are. Now, a saint is that one who has contacted that spiritual essence, and more they're becoming imbued with that. You see, in the beginning, we're more worldly consciousness than we are spiritual consciousness. That is to say, our attention is drawn out into this world. And because of that, we wander in ignorance of our spiritual presence. But as we learn to quiet ourselves and to go inside, we become more and more spiritualized. We feel the spiritual presence. We feel the spiritual essence. And it is a vibration. It is a feeling. It is a whole experience that comes to you. Now, it can come through seeing the light of God, or hearing this Om vibration, or feeling this wonderful presence. And within it is contained all wisdom and all knowledge. So it begins to open us up to revelation, to greater things. And so to become a saint means to become so imbued with this spiritual presence, the spiritual essence, of which is we're all made up of in the beginning, but we've fallen ignorant to. We're in spiritual amnesia. And we awaken to that. And that's what the Buddha means, is the awakened one. We awaken to this knowledge, to this presence, to this spirit, of which we are all a part. And our Father God is the Father God of everyone. Not just of a few, just not to a select, but to everyone. But the thing is who realizes it? Who knows it? And this is where the select come in. This is where the few come in, are those who have truly realized it in their lives. And this is what our life has brought us to in this moment. It's brought us to this crossroads where we can choose to continue on in this ordinary human existence, or we can take the advanced lessons and methods that take us deeper into our own story, into our own spiritual consciousness, that lets us know the truth of who and what we truly are. That we don't, it's not just a matter of belief, it's not just a matter of speculation, but it's a matter of absolute certainty that comes about through the spiritual exploration. And so my invitation to you is that we all journey there together, and that we make it first and foremost in our life, that we set our priorities to make God first, to make this wonderful realization the first, middle, and last of our day, that we strive for it, that we take the techniques that we're given and implement those and become saint-like. Now, some people have a certain image of what a saint is. And, you know, one devotee was saying one time, well, I don't want to become the church lady. And apparently this is somebody on television who, you know, really had their nose turned up and they looked down on everybody else and they were quite persnickety and you know the type. And they're very judgmental of other people, and oftentimes they don't live the life themselves. And so they didn't want to become that. They don't, you know, one of the things we have to overcome is how we're perceived by others. So many of us live in fear of what others think of us, how others perceive us. Will they approve of this? Will they approve of me? Will I stand out? Will I be different? But if you will notice, every historical personage who is of note today, stood out at the time. Oftentimes they were laughed at. Oftentimes they were persecuted. Oftentimes they were misunderstood. They were different. And one of the things that made them important from history's standpoint is that they did not let go of that difference. In fact, they set out to change the world. They didn't conform to the world. They wanted to make the world a better place. And because of that, they stuck to their guns. They stood firm in their resolve to be different. So from one way of thinking, being different is the best thing that we can do, particularly when we're focused on a good, particularly when we're focused on changing and uplifting this world. And first of all, we have to uplift this world, huh? This inner world. We can go about trying to change all the outer world, but unless we do the work that changes this inner world, what good will that do? What good? How will we know to do good? Unless we're taking this inner illumination and using it as our guide for doing good in this world, what does this ego know? What does this limited form, who we are? We try to do good in the world, but how do we know to do good? What will actually make a difference for somebody else? We cannot know unless we are taking our lead from this inner light, this inner illumination. And that can only be gained by becoming still, becoming quiet, moving into greater depths of our own being, and discovering the saint within ourselves who already exists. You see, you're not creating something new. You are already that light. You are already that intelligence, whether we know it or not. We are made up of that. It is our essence. In the beginning of John, it says that the Word made everything, and everything was made by that Word, and there is nothing that was made that was not made by that Word. Everything. Now, everything is everything, isn't it? And yet, we want to divide up this world, and particularly with ourselves. And so oftentimes we feel bad about ourselves. We feel that God doesn't exist. There's no light in me. I'm just this little human being, and I'm going about my life. And what is there special about me? What is there special about this form of God? And we don't recognize that that same intelligence, that same light, that same presence that created everything created this also. And no matter how we judge ourselves, no matter how we feel about ourselves, that is our inmost truth. And to come to that point of realization and recognition, that we are all made up of that light, that life, is to become saint consciousness, is to become a saint in this world. And it's not taking on a persona, it's not becoming holier than thou. It's living in that presence of love and light and intelligence and wisdom, being guided by it day to day. It's very practical. It guides you in the most minute details of your life, if you will let it. And so to live and breathe and that spiritual essence is to become a saint. Isn't that wonderful? And it is who we are. It is our essence. You are that already, whether you realize it or not. And the whole point is to realize it. Why deny yourself? Why deny yourself the inmost glory that you can imagine? When we talk about spiritual bliss and joy, it's not anything that's describable in human terms. If you think about the joy that a small child has in anticipation of Christmas coming the next day, the excitement, the joy, that's just a little piece. If you think about the thing that gives you the most pleasure in the world, that's just a small, infinitesimal aspect of the joy and the glory that is in store for you as this inner consciousness is revealed. And so we deny ourselves, we impoverish ourselves by not accepting it, by not receiving it, by not opening ourselves to it. So not from a standpoint of becoming holier than thou or looking down our nose on somebody, but from a standpoint of living in that consciousness of love, of light, of wisdom, that is our spiritual essence. This is what it means to become a saint. I would like to stop there and see if there are any questions about the things I've spoken of or anything about your spiritual search as it's occurred over the last few weeks. The medulla, of course, is right at the base of the skull in the back of the head. If we reach back and feel there's kind of a little soft area right below the skull right there, and the medulla exists there. And at the sahasrara, at the top of the head, is the place of illumination. These powerhouses that exist all the way down through the spine start at the very base of the spine. And the first three chakras are from the navel below, from our belly button down below. And then the heart center is the fourth chakra. It's there that we first transcend kind of the normal human kind of way of living. In the heart center, we get compassion for people beyond ourselves. We feel for other people. It takes us beyond just strictly concern for ourselves. And so that is the place, in a human sense, that we get compassion for others. In divine consciousness, it is the place of ecstatic, pure love. It is its essence as it flows through us. As we move up to the throat area, there is the fifth chakra, and this is the place of discernment of truth and speaking of truth that comes there. Then at the medulla is the sixth center, and it is the Christ center, and it comes straight across to the ajna, in between the two eyebrows here. That is the place of divine wisdom, Christ consciousness. It is there that we realize that I and my Father are one. It's not that we just intellectually accept it. We come into the living essence of that. But at that center, there is still a sense of I and thou, as Martin Buber would talk about. There is this essence of I am this human being who lives in this body, who has a certain identity to it. When we move from this ajna to the sahasrara, or the top, the crown chakra, the thousand-petal lotus, in Revelations, it's called the thousand years of peace that comes when the Christ returns. So it's the same thing. It's a thousand-petal lotus, a thousand years of peace. And as we unfold into this highest state of consciousness, we experience ourselves in pure union with the spiritual consciousness. There's no more a sense of I and thou, but there is I am he. Blessed Spirit, I am he. I am this spirit. And there is pure oneness in it. which is the meaning of yoga, oneness, to be one with. And that experience is quite beyond description. So through the medulla comes this pure intelligence and light and life of the Christ intelligence, but when it's taken to the Sahasrara, that's the complete illumination, the complete oneness. And that's the difference between the two. When you feel that center open up at the crown center, at the top of the head, you feel in the beginning kind of a tingling sensation at the very top of the head. There's a name for where the baby has a soft spot. You know what that is.
Fontanelle,
yeah. Thank you. And it occurs right in that area there. And it's either you feel a pressure there or you feel a tingling sensation. And then as the life force rises up to there, you feel this expansion. And rather than feeling like you leaving your body, it's rather a sense that your body is expanding. And as you grow in the spirit, you feel as if this whole world is your body. And then beyond that, as this expansion goes out and out and out, you feel as if the whole universe is your body, and then beyond that, into pure light of being, and you feel like the light itself is your body. So it's not as if you are going someplace else or becoming somebody else in a way. You feel as if you are really discovering who you've always been. You know, I don't know about all of you, but there's a large portion of my life that I've wandered around feeling like I don't quite know who I am. I have a sense of who I am, certainly, and in the world, but there's some deeper knowledge, there's some inner meaning that I'm missing out of all of this. And this is what we're all hungering for, this is what we're looking for. And people do it in so many different ways. They try to find ways of entertainment, or they find drugs, or they find alcohol, or they find distractions of one kind or another. But when we open into the spiritual essence, we really discover, we feel like we're coming home for the first time. And it just gets embedded into our brain again and again. This is who I truly am. And this other was a false sense. So Jesus said, let the dead bury the dead. Come join the living. Well, the dead, in a literal sense, can't bury the dead, but it's those who are dead to spirit, dead to their spiritual being, dead to their essence. The spiritual essence is that your life before that, it was almost as if you were dead, sleepwalking through life, not fully alive, not truly illumined. And you come into that spiritual essence and intelligence, and you feel alive and joyful. And intelligence comes to you not through thinking, but through intuitive apprehension that comes spontaneously to you. So it truly is a transformation of this life. And yet on the outer sense, you look the same. In some ways, your habits are the same. And yet inwardly, everything has changed. Everything is different. Any other questions? There are no dumb questions, by the way. I find, and I think it's true, for anyone who takes up any kind of a craft or any kind of discipline at all, that you keep coming back to some of the basics are the most essential pieces. Those are the foundations, everything. And really, when you become very, very good at something, you rediscover something new and deeper about the very basics, about the path, about anything that you're learning about. Distractions and meditation. As I mentioned before, meditation starts with concentration. And in Eastern and Western spiritual science, both focus on the breath. Spirit means breath, or to breathe. To discover the breath is to go into this breathless state. But to do that, we learn to concentrate the mind. Now, the mind is like this restless monkey that never likes to be tamed at all. If you've ever taken a wild animal and tried to tame it, it's very skittish at first, and it won't come to you, and it won't kind of obey you at all. And then as you work with it, it gradually will come under your control to some extent. And if you get very good at it, you can get it to come under your control a lot, say a dog, for instance. Now, in meditation, this mind is used to running wild. We don't discipline our mind very much. We don't bring it back to something and really learn to focus it. Sometimes a musician or an artist or a scientist will learn to focus their mind to some extent. But to bring it into a single point of attention is a very difficult thing to do. So we try to bring this focus of attention into the state of stillness, and yet the mind keeps running. Why? Because it has a certain momentum that's built up. It comes into through the senses, but then through the subconscious mind, it's always feeding us ideas. If you try to still your mind at all, suddenly you're thinking about yesterday, or you're anticipating tomorrow. You have some memory that comes up, and that triggers some other memory, and suddenly you are light years off into space and time and place, far from being centered and being in the here and now. The only way to do it is to constantly bring the mind back. As often as it goes away, bring it back. Now, if you're training a dog to come to you, what you do is you say, "Fido, come." Now, if Fido doesn't come, then you walk over, you get its collar and you bring it over and you say, "Sit," and they wag its tail. Then you give it a little cookie and pet it, and it's happy. And pretty soon it realizes that when you say come, it means to come. And it comes and it gets still next to you. Now, other people you see training their dog, they say, "Fluffy, come. Fluffy, come here. Fluffy, come here. Fluffy, come here." Well, Fluffy doesn't have any knowledge of what Fluffy means or what come means. It just thinks that you're just talking to hear yourself talk. So it runs around, you know, very nicely while you're over there, "Fluffy, come here." It has no power behind it. It has no real intent behind it. So when we set aside time to meditate and to stop a wandering mind, we must become intentional about it. We can put some flowers on an altar, maybe some pictures, maybe some incense, maybe some candles. Something that denotes to the mind that this is a time for worship, this is a time for meditation. And then perhaps we proceed it with a prayer. Maybe we get settled and we just take a few minutes to let the mind kind of dwell, that this is a time of getting into silence. And when we're ready, then we let our breath out. And when we let the breath out, we exhale it all the way. The next time we breathe in mentally repeating a Sanskrit word, Hong, like Hong Kong, H-O-N-G. And as the breath comes in, we just mentally repeat this word, Hong. As the breath goes back out, we mentally repeat the word, Saw, like hammer and saw, only it's spelled S-A-U. And these are two words. Now, in yoga science, they have gone into a great deal of the vibration of words. And these two words, vibratory, are resonant with the Christ consciousness, or the Kutastha Chaitanya consciousness here at the third eye point. And as we mentally breathe in and out these words, then we are harmonizing ourselves with that chakra, or that inner state of consciousness. And so it's very, very simple, that is, but it's not easy. Have you ever noticed that sometimes simple things are not easy? And so the thing is that we get caught up in the momentum of the mind. The mind keeps going and going and going. And so we mentally breathe in Hong, we mentally breathe out Sa. Every time the mind wanders away, we bring it back. We get off onto a daydream that takes us all about yesterday and what happened yesterday. We simply bring the mind back, just like the Fido dog. We bring it over, stay. It wanders away again, we bring it back, stay. We do it very firmly, very consistently, but not with anger, not with a lot of emotion, because then we get caught up in another trap, and that's trying to be overly controlling within our own mind. And so we're gentle about it, but we're firm. And we're very consistent, we're very persistent. And it's good to set aside a time, early in the morning and late at night, in order to do this practice. And as we set a consistency of time along with that, that helps us also into this discipline. As Swami Ram Dass was talking about in this article, this self-discipline is required. And at first the mind wanders every which direction, and then suddenly, through this practice, it becomes still. Well, this is something perhaps we've never experienced before. And so we really note it, and we feel the peace in it, and the stillness. And we think, oh, I want this to go on forever. Well, just about the time we have that thought, our mind is racing off into different directions again. And off we go into all the different assorted messes that we get ourselves into. So we go back to the practice again. We bring it back. We bring it back. We bring it back. And as we get in the practice of this, slowly the mind becomes disciplined. And we can bring it to this point of stillness. And then, on a moment's notice, we can bring it into that stillness, and we can still ourselves. And even when there's emotions running through, or even when there's strong thoughts running through, we get to the place where at any moment we can bring ourselves right back and into that stillness. Can you imagine what a boon that is? What a benefit that is? You're worrying about something, and you realize it's past doing. You're not really worrying to a point of strategizing what to do. It's just the worry thing that we do, going around and around and around, and it's not helpful. It interferes with our sleep, it disturbs our consciousness, and it's not helpful to us at all. Bringing the mind right back to that stillness, letting that all go, and coming into that stillness, and feeling that peace, feeling that place of being centered. And you can begin to get an idea of what a wonderful practice this is as we get into it. And we're challenged by it. But nothing ever really good ever came without a price, did it? If we wanted to go into a certain profession and we had to go through the schooling and get the financing and everything that had to go into it, we had to pay a price to do that. You know, if we wanted to have children, we had to do all the preparation. The women had to go through all the difficulties and pain of a pregnancy and birth. And so everybody had to pull together to make it work. Everything that is of benefit comes at a price, and so does this. And it's mostly because we've just never disciplined ourselves. And so if we can take on this very simple discipline, morning and night, maybe a little bit in noon and afternoon, you know, if you're very tired in the afternoon, been expending a lot of life energy, and you can go someplace that's quiet and close your eyes and for 15 minutes, 10 minutes, practice this Hong Sa and just feel the regeneration that comes about as a result. And so it's a wonderful, wonderful gift. So there's no substitute for going through it each time and bringing Fluffy back, bringing Fido back. It's just what we have to do. You know, we have all these books, The 5-Minute Manager, and, you know, Enlightenment in 10 Seconds or whatever. You know, it doesn't happen that way. We're given these techniques because they're wonderful, and they do create shortcuts. We don't have to reinvent the wheel all over again. But we also have to put ourselves into the game. We have to make a decision that this is something that's important to us and that we're willing to strive after. And if we don't, then, you know, the saying, if we always do what we always did, then we'll always get what we always got. We'll hold true. We need to be willing to try to do something differently. But try it. You'll like it. Any other questions or thoughts for today? We're hooked up by telephone today to Prince Rupert. Hopefully they've been able to hear today. But they're certainly welcome to ask questions if they wish. Can you hear it? Tomorrow night we're going to have a potluck and a kirtan that's singing God's name, and at Diane's house. And Diane, what time do you think? 5 o'clock for the potluck? Okay, were you thinking of something else, or?
No, we just normally do it about 5.
Okay.
I don't know, we don't give
it. Right.
Whatever.
Somewhere between 5 and 5:30. And if you need directions, you can get them from Diane, but that'll be a wonderful time, too. So, It's to sing and to meditate together builds an energy and a force that's quite wonderful. And in this transformation of saint consciousness going from the human to the divine, it's so wonderful to have a spiritual family and to have supports and to have people who are also on the path trying to do it. You know, you look at the amount of energy in the world that goes into worldly pursuits. Look at the expense and energy put into advertising to go out and buy more and do more and get more involved in the world and all of that. And how much is supporting there for your spiritual journey? You know, very, very little, it seems. And so to spend this time with spiritual family and to have that intention to put the mind on God and to feel God's presence is just a wonderful thing to have. So I encourage you and invite you all to come. And that's out at Maple Ridge. That'll be tomorrow between 5 and 5:30. Speaking of chanting, why don't we have one before we close? We all come from God. We all come from God, and in Him we all return like a drop of rain. Return. Like a ray of light, returning to the sun. Yes, we all come from God, and in Him we all return like a drop of rain, returning to the ocean like a ray of light, returning to the sun. Yes, we all come from God, and in Him we all return like a drop of rain, returning to the ocean like a sun. Yes, we all come from God, and in Him we all return like a drop of rain, returning to the like a ray of light, returning to the sun. Yes, we all come from God. Yes, we all come from God. Yes, we all Heavenly Father.
Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
Of thy glorious presence.
Of thy glorious presence.
In every part of my being.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
And surrender myself to thee.
And surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my
intelligence.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee.
Of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Ooh. Peace, bliss, amen.